This is the MLWRadio.com network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We are back yet again because there's some Osaka business to talk about. I'm your host Strigger, and on my side of course is my man Dylan. Dylan, how are you doing?
Strigger, it's so great to be back, so fantastic. These G1 shows, they keep moving along, and I love all of our updates for them. And we're really on the home stretch of the G1. I'm honestly going to be kind of sad when the tournament's over. We've had so many great matches. You know, so many things to talk about, too. And, you know, when you think about it, New Japan really has dominated the wrestling world this past month. So it's going to be interesting to see where we go in terms of not just us, but where the wrestling world goes from here after the G1 ends. And whoever the winner is, we're getting on there. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit, who the potential winners could be, because we're seeing some things get set up. And it's a really interesting time in wrestling right now. So I'm so happy to be here. And it's a beautiful day here where I'm at. It's just now getting, it's almost noon. If it were on a weekday, you would be stopping me from watching Bold and the Beautiful right now. Thankfully, I've dodged that bullet. I don't have to worry about Bill's escapade, that bastard that I hate so much. But we are here to talk about Japanese pro wrestling, our favorite thing. So that's what I'm happy about.
Yeah, great. So you talked about New Japan dominating the wrestling world, and on our last show we talked about some other tournaments that are going on or that were finished recently with the Fire Festival and the King of DDT. King of DDT is still going on. They had the second round this past Saturday. But there is also another tournament that just started this weekend on the Friday. All Japan has begun their Junior Tag Battle of Glory, and it's quite the interesting tournament actually, because they have a cool lineup for their tournament. They have, of course, their own teams of Atsushi Aoki and Hikaru Sato. Then they have Koji Iwamoto and Tajiri. Also Atsushi Maruyama and Masashi Takeda, who won the tournament last year. But then they have some additions from the outside. They have Kaji Tomato and Shiori Asai from Kaientai Dojo. They have Masaki Mochizuki and Shun Skywalker from Dragon Gate. Some of the rare outings of other of Dragon Gate wrestlers in other promotions here. And also they have Shuji Kondo and Kotaro Suzuki. Shuji Kondo won the junior singles tournament they had earlier this year. But here, they had a show on the Friday, and they had two big upsets on that show. First of which was Koji Iwamoto pinning Masaki Mochizuki with the Kokono Geijitsu, with his judo throw, in the prelude of Iwamoto challenging for the junior title at the end of the month. And also, in the main event, Atsushi Aoki and Hikaru Sato defeated Shuji Kondo and Kotaro Suzuki when Hikaru Sato made Shuji Kondo tap out. So that's the show from the Friday. And they already had two other shows. And right now, Koji Iwamoto and Tajiri are leading. They have 4 points, as well as Aoki and Hikaru Sato. And one team I was missing, of course, I missed one team, is Black Tiger and Black Mensore. I wonder who that is.
I don't know. I'm surprised you forgot about them.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
I don't know. But another show that went on actually on the Sunday that we're recording this, in Kanazawa, very interesting lineup actually. They drew 1,719 fans for a show that, for example, had Tajiri against Otoko Sakari for the Gaora TV title. And a show that also had a special Dream Six-Man Tag Team match. On one side, we had Naoya Nomura, Yoshitatsu, and Kazuma Sakamoto, which at first doesn't sound like such a dream tag, but the team they were facing were Jun Akiyama, Riki Choshu, and Hiroshi Hase, who returned for this one spot. So I only was able to watch the main event this morning because the New Japan show still was running. So in the main event, Zeus, Takao, Mori, and Kai beat Kento Miyahara, Yuma Aoyagi, and Kenzo. I'm gonna be catching up on those shows over the course of the next days. It's looking pretty interesting, this tournament.
Yeah, you look at the teams, some of them are kind of mismatched from what you would expect. A team like Mochizuki and Shun Skywalker, you wouldn't really expect them as a team. I don't think they're... Are they a regular team in Dragon Gate?
I don't know. Actually, I do the Dragon Gate results, of course, for Pure Love, but I'm not really a close follower to Dragon Gate.
Yeah.
I know that they had a... That they have a match lined up for Kurken Hall next week, where Mochizuki is actually facing Shun Skywalker, Hiro Watanabe, and Yuki Yoshioka in a 3-on-1 handicap match. So,
wow,
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But in this tournament, though, they are a team, and I like that they put them together. You look at a team like Tajiri and Koji Iwamoto. Not necessarily the most stylistically balanced team, I would say, when you look at that.
The thing is, with Tajiri nowadays, he's basically the guy in All Japan who does it all. They had him challenge for the heavyweight tag title, they have him as their Gaora TV champion, now he's in the junior tournament again, he's doing it all.
He's doing it all, but I have to say, I really love Iwamoto. I think he's super underrated by people who may not know, may not know a lot about All Japan or follow it closely. I think Iwamoto is one of the better juniors outside of New Japan going, and someone with a lot of upside, too. Not just one of the best, but someone that I think you can really build a division around. Tajiri, he's had his run. He had that legendary title reign with the junior title last year, and I think that's a really mismatched team. I would have loved to have seen Iwamoto with someone else, to be honest, but you are right that Tajiri is the ultimate utility man in All Japan right now, that he's doing so much, and they have the lead going right now. It's still early, too early to really prognosticate too much or make a prediction, but them, I'm sure Aoki and Sato will be around by the end, obviously. Those are the two kind of stalwarts of the junior division in All Japan. But I'd love to see one of these teams, like the Dragon Gate team, maybe that Iwamoto team, because they're always looking for different ways to kind of push some of these younger dudes. But I think that would be a good way, having Iwamoto challenge, maybe win the tag titles, or, you know, the All-Asia tag titles, or at least challenge for them. That would be a really good, interesting match, too. Iwamoto pairing off against Oyagi and Nomura. Mm-hmm. I think that those would be two good matchups if they could set up some kind of All-Asia tag title shots in the future.
I was surprised that Keiichi Sato isn't in the tournament, but apparently he hasn't earned the right to be in a tournament back yet in All Japan.
So. Man, his feuds were so good at the early mm-hmm. part of the year and last year, you know, with the other Okada, mm-hmm. not the one we'll talk about later, Suzuki, Yusuke Okada, the hate speecher, as some people knew him as, but he got in trouble for that, so they stopped it. Sato's feud with Kotaro, too, and stuff, and subsequent partnership as well, you know, I think he would have been a great choice to team with Kotaro, but... Yeah, you obviously want Kondo in the tournament. Nothing wrong with that. So I like that team, too. I think that's that's almost like a throwback team to me to mid-2000s junior wrestling, Kotaro and Shuji Kondo. So I'm all for them teaming up. Kind of a Wrestle 1 tinge to it, too. So lots of different teams and lots of different promotions represented, which I really like. And you're seeing it now between Shingo and the Champions Carnival and Mochizuki and Skywalker in this tournament. It's nice that they're... We're letting some people work together. We know there's been some changes in Dragon Gate recently.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but Still, it's always great to see Mochizuki, a top flight worker. Even if I don't like Dragon Gate or I'm not a fan or go through a cold period on the promotion, Mochizuki to me always is someone that delivers and someone that I'm interested in.
Definitely. I was watching all his title matches when he was the champion earlier this year. He had great title matches with KZ, with Benkei in Dragon Gate.
That Benkei match was really good.
Yes. And do you remember when he was in the World Tag League out of the blue when he teamed with Yuji Nagata a couple of years ago? That was awesome.
Yeah. And I love it. Like, wasn't Mochizuki in one of the original Super J Cups? I think the 95 version.
I think so.
Yeah. All the way back then, wrestling in the mid-90s.
Mochi. Yeah, definitely. He's been wrestling a long time. He has debuted in 1994, yeah. And let's look at his tournaments. He was in 1995 Super J Cup. That's true. Mm-hmm. Second year when he was a pro, actually.
he was the young up-and-comer.
Right. He lost to Shinjiro Otani in the first round, though.
Otani was awesome.
That's true. So, yeah, that's the All Japan Junior Tag Battle of Glory. That's going to be running all the way through August 25. And then they have their big show in Shiba in the Nagareyama Kikkoman Arena. They have a card, a pretty stacked lineup, actually, for this show. And to be quite honest, Dylan, I think this lineup is better than the Osaka lineup, because this Osaka lineup was heavily based on Bodyguard and Zeus. But this show actually has some pretty cool matches. So let's just go through the card here. We have no match order right now, so I just put it together how I thought they would probably lay out the lineup. It's Kotaro Suzuki and Keiichi Sato against Black Mensore and Black Tiger 7. Masanobu Fuchi, Osamu Nishimura, Ultimate Dragon, Hikaru Sato versus Kai Tajiri, Atsushi Maruyama, and Naoshi Sano. Then we have some...
I love that team.
Yeah, that's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Naoshi Sano.
He's
running this bar in Tokyo, and he's basically just wrestling for fun. I think he's earning the majority of his living off the bar he's running.
Then we
have three Road to Odo tournament matches, with first of all Zuwama and Dylan James against Joe Doering and Gianni Valletta, Jun Akiyama and Yoshitatsu against Jake Lee and Ruji Sai, and then the big one, Kento Miyahara against Yuji Hino. And then we have three title bouts for the All-Asia Tag Team title. Naoya Nomura and Yuma Aoyagi defend against the X-Bombers, Dylan. Takao Mori,
yes,
and Isami Kodaka.
They are back.
Right. Atsushi Aoki defends his junior title against Koji Iwamoto, and Shuji Ishikawa challenges Zeus for the Triple Crown. Title change or not? Yeah.
No, I think Zeus keeps the title. I don't think they're going to Shuji right away. I think he's going to lose it very soon, but not to Ishikawa.
Okay,
is basically where I go with that.
Yeah, I'd give him at least one or two defenses of the title.
Yeah, and just not Ishikawa. Like, he had his reign last year. No, yeah. Going back to him really serves no purpose ultimately. Mm. But I could see him losing very fast to whoever they have next in line. Zeus. I want to see how this does. This really is a pretty good card overall, nothing too crazy, but I really like some of those matches. I think that opener could be pretty good. I think we found out why Sato's not in the tournament. They were saving the big match for this show.
Yeah.
Okay, Black Tiger. Okay, so I think we can agree on that. Miyahara and Hino is a standout match, but much better than any of the undercard matches on the Osaka show, in my opinion, and a rematch from the Champion Carnival. So... Mm-hmm. And they delivered very well in that opportunity. I think they're going to deliver very well again. That's the match I'm anticipating. That Zeus Ishikawa match could be Show Me Power Part 2.
Oh,
that's
yes.
my prediction.
Actually, Part 3, because Zeus already showed his power.
That's true. That is true. Like, you're right. He finally... This is the story of Zeus. At first, his power was challenged. Then he showed it. And now he has to take the next step. He has to stay on top. So that's where we're at. Part 3 of the Show Me Power saga, also known as the Zeus All Japan run.
Keeping the power alive right now.
Yes.
That's it. So that's for All Japan. I've been watching some DDT Beer Garden shows. They always run a stretch of 1 week where they basically present all their promotions. I think Ganbare didn't have a show, but Tokyo Yoshi Pro had a show, Basara had a show, and basically some of the guys on top, some of the most important or most popular wrestlers in DDT get their own shows. For example, Shuten Doji and Harashima had a show that I watched. Was pretty cool. In the main event, they had Kudo, Yukio Sakaguchi, and Masahiro Takanashi beating Yarashima, Hoshi Hebinki, and Katsu Sada Yaguchi. They were accompanied to the ring by Poison Zawada Julie, and during the match, Gorgeous Matsuno and Hoshi Tango were responsible for creating an atmosphere that you thought snakes were always around the ring. They were had these little rattling toys, and they made noises all the time. That was pretty cool. Yukio Sakaguchi faced DJ Nira on that show, and also in another Beer Garden show that was actually the All Out show, Yukio Sakaguchi faced Ukui Shinbu Kamen, which was a pretty fun match. And on that show, Yuki Ueno and Kudo had a legendary thumb battle. And actually, to be quite honest here, Akito and Isami Kodaka, they had a time limit draw, 20 minutes on that show. And if you are a fan of grappling, you should really check out that match, because that was very good.
Awesome.
And one thing I was missing from... I wasn't missing from the All Out show. They had a weapon death match for Shunma Katsumata, and he was facing Violento Jack from Freedoms. I was very worried for poor Shunma. They had a barbed wire board lined up in the ring. They had a board full of empty cans. But Dylan, the worst weapon of them all was that somebody brought Legos. And they put it all in the ring. And if you know how much it hurts to step on a Lego...
Yes.
That was the worst weapon in the entire match.
Man, I've done that so many times when I was a kid.
That's a weapon we can all relate to.
Yeah, that is true. Those are the weapons that have the most impact nowadays. Not many people can look at a light tube and getting smashed over the head with it in their lives. Hopefully not. But Legos, we've all stepped on them, and imagine falling down onto them and how much it could hurt. And you're on a big stack of Legos. That would be horrible. So I feel for Shuma.
Yeah,
on
that one. I still have three more shows to catch up with from the Beer Garden. But those Beer Garden shows are usually easy to watch. First 45 minutes to 60 minutes. There's a lot of banter. For the... which one was it? For the All Out show, yeah. The All Out show, they had a drinking match in the opening match. But actually, the first, 45 minutes was Trent's M. Hiroshi doing a yoga class in front of the camera. But they didn't have any sound on. So he did this yoga class in the background. And in the ring, they had a table set up, and guys like Daiki Shimomura and Nobuhiro Shimatani were just drinking in the ring while Trent Miyoshi was having a yoga class.
And please tell me you watched all 45 minutes of this.
Did not.
Unbelievable. Listen, in this day and age, you want to find new ways to promote your company and your talent, okay? Sure. This is a new way. You don't have many yoga masters. it's like a dual, for your money, you're getting dual value. You get the wrestling and you get yoga you're amazing. Into that. So,
yeah.
Oh, huge value.
At the show that Harashima and Shuten Doji ran, Gorgeous Matsuno was singing for the first 15 minutes. That I watched.
Oh, of course. Okay, I'm glad. I'm glad you've got your priorities.
Yes, I got them all amidst G1 craziness. I just have to watch Gorgeous Matsuno sing for 15 minutes. Of course.
Was it something where it was like, oh look, here's Ishii and Ibushi. Wait a minute, I have to watch Matsuno sing.
But you also watched some other wrestling except for New Japan. You just told me you watched the Wrestle One Grand Prix.
Yeah, I did. I watched the final show, and I have to say I won't belabor this whole point too much because I know everybody's looking forward to the G1 stuff. But let's talk about some matches from Wrestle One. We don't get to talk about them a lot, and as always, when we do, we have to say they're really doing a good job. They're having good shows. Again, I think really this whole show was a very enjoyable watch. I think Wrestle 1 is one of the more enjoyable and most easy promotions to watch if you look at it. And they had a whole show-long storyline, too, of the semifinals of their another tournament. This is Striga going on right now. Apparently everyone loves them at this time of year.
Yeah.
The Wrestle 1 Grand Prix. We had two semifinal matches on the show in the finals, obviously. They had some multi-man matches, too. The first one, Alejandro, Andy Wu, Manabu Soya, and Takumi Baba versus Masayuki Mitomi, Ryuji Hishikata, always a favorite of mine, Hishikata. Takanori Ito, another favorite, and Sugutaka Sato. I thought it was a good match. The Soya team won, and it was just a fine opening match, nothing to talk about too much. The semifinal matches were Koji Doi versus Kuma Arashi, which is a big grudge match because their tag team broke up, obviously. And Doi got the win, and they were kind of teasing if the Infant Terribles were to clash in the finals, the team of Arashi and Shotaro Ashino, which would have been an interesting match for sure. And I love that their ring name is based on Metal Gear Solid, which I can relate to, as my name Dylan Fox was actually a tribute to Gray Fox of Metal Gear Solid fame. So the smart people cosplay off of Metal Gear Solid in wrestling. That's why Ashino is one of the best, and Arashi is one of the better up-and-comers. But the Doi-Arashi match was really good, too. I thought it was a really strong match. And it was really fast, too. It's really, if it's something where you don't have a lot of time, you need to match to check out and see if you like Wrestle 1, check out this Doi and Kuma Arashi match, because they just went about 8 minutes, I'd say, 8 minutes, maybe. And Doi got the win with the Naiken Jogatame, which was a really nice finish. They had a good pace throughout, no downtime or anything like that. The next match was Jiro Ikemen Kurashio versus Shotaro Ashino. Really strong match, I thought. Actually, maybe even a little better than the other one. And Jiro's up and down with me, but Ashino, to me, is one of the absolute best wrestlers in Japan right now, in my opinion. I think he's someone that's hugely underrated, but if anybody watches him, he's not underrated. He just doesn't have the viewers. If people would watch him more, he would blow up and be a big star, someone that could jump, be a really valuable commodity if somebody like a New Japan wanted to take a chance on one of these indie guys. He would be one of my top picks. Then they had a really great match, too. Actually, maybe even my favorite match of the show. The Cruiserweight title match between Yusuke Kodama and Io Del Pantera, which was a really big match, I thought. They both tried so hard. I thought there was a lot of effort. Pantera had a lot of great, unique moves, and I think he's someone that, again, is very underrated just based on not many people knowing him. Mm. He's someone that if you're in the mood for a good junior wrestling, watch Io Del Pantera. And Kodama, too, for that matter. He's a good wrestler, but Pantera, to me, really stood out.
He was in yet another tournament this summer because he was in the Global Junior Heavyweight Tag League that finished today. Actually, he was teaming with Ricky Marvin in that tag league.
That's an interesting team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, so many tournaments going on in Japanese wrestling this summer. It's crazy. It feels like even more than usual. There's all, you know, they like Noah has their tag league they usually run. All Japan's a little different with their junior leagues. They kind of go up and down sometimes. I don't remember it being in July last year, but there always seems to be a lot of tournaments around the summer. But this year especially, a lot really kind of not cashing in, but rivaling the G1 and doing the best they can. So good stuff there. Really, really like that match. That Io Del Pantera and Yusuke Kodama, check it out. And the semi-main event was a wild match with our friends from China, Shima, El Lindemann, T-Hawk, and Gao Jingla. They faced the team of the aforementioned Shuji Kondo, his partner, Kaz Hayashi, longtime partner, Masayuki Kono, and Jun Tancho. And the point of this match, it was kind of a wacky, wild, fun match. The point of it, though, was to really push Tancho. He lasted in the final two of his team, just getting sneakily eliminated by T-Hawk. But Kono actually eliminated T-Hawk afterwards, so the Wrestle 1 team got the win. This is an ongoing storyline between the Strong Hearts teams and the Wrestle 1 guys. So this is something they've really built up, and they're continuing to play off of going forward. So that's something to check out if you want some storylines in your wrestling. Then we had Ashino versus Koji Doi in the main event of the tournament after I mentioned what they did. I actually kind of liked the other two matches a little better, the semifinals, a little surprisingly, to be honest. But this was a good match, too, very solid. If it were an A block of G1, it would be a standout match. Ashino, I thought, really looked good, as always, and Doi really brought it. But I just thought there was a little more downtime, and the sense of urgency in the first two matches were quite a bit better, and they elevated themselves a bit more. But the wrestling itself was very strong. I thought these two are very, very good technically. And overall, though, I really liked all of those matches I just said, and the multi-man matches were inoffensive but not noteworthy. So a really good show from Wrestle 1 there, I think. You should check it out if you've got some time. I know G1's going on right now, but after G1's over with, you got to give this show a try if you want some good wrestling, you know, because I know you don't have a lot of time. So check it out, Wrestle 1. Worth your time, and I think it's a promotion that if you watch two or three shows, you'll get used to the stars they do have and the wrestlers they do have, and I think you'll get more invested. So give them a shot, because the tournament was a really good starting point for a new fan or somebody that maybe has not seen Wrestle 1 that much.
Yeah, another promotion I'll have to catch up with eventually, but not right now, Dylan. Let's get down to business, because two Osaka shows happened this weekend, the first of which was a B-block show on Saturday morning. Both shows actually in Osaka had about 5,500 fans, so the arena was basically sold out, and everybody expected that, to be honest. And this G1 show here started with, of course, the undercard tag matches, but we're not going to talk about them right here, except for that Evil and Bushi versus Okada and Gedo was a really nice tag match here on the undercard. And also Shota Umino is always very enjoyable when you see him in the ring. He's bringing a lot of fire to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go to the G1 matches. First of all here, we had Zanada going to 8 points. He beat Toruyano, who is still only at 2 points, in 5:22 by count out. This was great. I loved it. It was very enjoyable. It was only 5 minutes long, so you can't come along, Dylan, and say this was much too long. Toruyano's shtick has to be short matches. This was a short match. He basically taped Toruyano while he had him in the Paradise Lock, and he taped him to a guardrail on the outside. And then he didn't have enough. He took Rocky Romero and also put him in the Paradise Lock next to Toruyano. And, well, the ref counted for the countout, and Zanada won. That's what basically everybody predicted, because last year, remember, he had the match with Yano, and he beat him also with the Paradise Lock when he had Yano on the stage.
Yep.
Also by countout. And this time, again, the countout. Zanada left, and he left Romero in the Paradise Lock, and Romero was screaming for Milano to come, because, of course, on this planet, Zanada and Milano Collection AT are the only two persons who know how to apply and to get out of the prison, Paradise Lock.
Yeah, this was a straight comedy match. Like you said, it didn't go too crazy. I really did get a kick out of Rocky's involvement in this match. I thought that was a very good twist to all of this, to have him be involved in this. But obviously a goofy match overall. But still, it was fun. Like, for a 5-minute match, I can't knock it too much. My only problem ever with these kind of matches isn't that I dislike them necessarily, only that I dislike them in the tournament more than anything. But this was still a funny match.
Oh, then we've got something for you right here. Hiroki Goto beat Tama Tonga. Yeah. 11 minutes, 15 seconds by a DQ. I think I told you off-air already. A, for this match, the sequences that Tama Tonga and Hiroki Goto had, apart from the interferences, were quite good. And B, Tama Tonga, that's a point I already made on our last show, Tama Tonga is gaining much more from the storyline than Bad Luck Fale is. Because mm-hmm. at least in his matches, there is some reaction. In Fale's matches, there usually isn't. So it seems to me that at least for Tama Tonga, this is in some way working. But of course, the match, it was again designed to be destroyed by Tama Tonga, and that's what happened.
My only caveat to that is look who Tonga's facing compared to who Fale's facing in terms of overness. Like, these are some of the top stars in the company. Here you got the never champion Goto, Omega, Naito. You know, of course those matches are going to get over. Fale, unfortunately, he's wrestling guys like Hangman Page, Yoshihashi.
Well, he has Tanahashi and Okada.
Yeah, and like I said, he didn't get that over with him, unfortunately. Jay White, especially, that was a pretty bad match. You know, I actually kind of like the Tana match. You know, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, Fale,
out of all of them,
good, yeah.
So, okay match there. But Tonga, like I said, I don't know how much is, in the grand scheme of things, is this really elevating him to any noticeable level? I just can't see it based on these matches. And we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he'll get a huge reaction. I think in America, if they do it on a Bullet Club match, he'll get a big, big reaction.
Mm.
But in Japan, I'm very skeptical about where this is going long term for him. And I can't say I'd be too sad if they decided to go with someone else.
I don't expect this to be a storyline that will elevate him to a higher position on the card. I don't see that.
No, I think maybe you can see them as tag champions, him and his brother. But I can't see him challenging for any singles title or winning them. Maybe a challenge, but I don't know. I definitely didn't like this match, though. And whether it's in the tournament, outside of the tournament, whatever. Like, it's just we've seen kind of the same old stuff happen over and over in these matches, and that's my problem a lot of times, too, even with Yano. But especially in this tournament, especially Tonga, you know, it's just the same thing over and over.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that point later on when we talk about Fale. Let's keep it for later on. Next up, we had a great match. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Juice Robinson with the Cremation Lily, a finishing move where we basically, he took everything that he could get, every limb that was available for him, he clutched it, and he sat down on Juice Robinson, and Juice Robinson had to verbally submit because he didn't have any limbs to tap with. That was pretty fun. And this Cremation Lily, the name is based on a British artist that Zack Sabre apparently is friends with. He's also on Twitter, and I made a tweet yesterday about that. The match, I enjoyed it very much. I got a question for you, Dylan. Actually, that's something that Zack Sabre pointed out after the match when he went up the ramp with Takamichi Noku. He noted that Juice Robinson hit him with a closed fist. And that's what I noted during the match as well. I always thought when Juice was going for his punches that he would open the fist while punching. That is actually the first time that I noted that Juice is using the closed fist.
I wonder where they're going with that, if that really means anything. Maybe he just forgot to close his hand.
Maybe.
or open his hand. I said, I don't know, that's really meta, but a very good call on Zack Sabre Jr.'s part. Again, one of the best promos and talkers and improvisers as well in the business when it comes to talking. I really like this match. I liked the finish. I thought it was great. This Cremation Lily, really good stuff. I thought Juice, I was so surprised that Zack won this match, to be honest with you. I thought they were setting up Juice to kind of go on a run to make up for his lackluster start of the tournament.
Apparently the storyline is not so apparent as we figured it would be.
I guess not. Like I said, another challenger for Juice. But I don't know. Like I said, hard to say where they went with that. But I thought the match itself was very strong. I thought both men worked pretty well together. And really solid match. A very good match. I wouldn't say great or as good as the top two matches we'll talk about, but still a very good match. Yep. A very solid third match as well on the show.
Definitely. But next up, man, Tomohiro Ishii. He did it. Big match, Tom. He beat Kenny Omega. He beat the champion. 22 minutes, 42 seconds. Right now, Dylan, rated at Cage Match at 9.86. An absolute outstanding match. And the actually, among all those amazing things they did during the match, where Kenny Omega did this diving foot stomp to the outside, where he almost crushed Ishii's chest, or even the bloodied up Kenny Omega, I thought the most impressive spot actually was when Tomohiro Ishii headbutted Kenny Omega's back of the head while Omega was coming down.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was something else. Man, this match was freaking incredible. I thought, Ishii, let me tell you something about Ishii. He's so great that he does things that if anybody else would do them, I'd come on here and say, oh man, that was really cheesy, or something of the like. But when he does them, it's great somehow. He makes it great even when it shouldn't be. And I don't know how he does it. He's just like a Superman. This was my third favorite match of the tournament, and Ishii has all three of my top three favorite matches of this tournament.
As I just mentioned, Big Match Tom, that's one of his nicknames. And actually, another nickname was given to him by the Japanese commentary on this show, because of course Kenny Omega calls himself the best bout machine, but on Japanese commentary that was done by Kushida, Haruo Murata and Milano Collection AT, they called him best bout machine made in Japan.
Listen, Ishii should be the best. Like, he needs to take that nickname from Omega. He's got to get it. That has to be a title in and of itself if we're going to go there. You have to pass it down. You know, I think Ishii he's ascended to that level, in my opinion. He was already there, to be honest. But still, after this match, he definitely was there. If there was any small criticism, I thought they had a little bit of a rough sequence early on.
Yeah,
I think they had
two actually very early on.
Yeah. A couple of rough spots early on, but they kind of made up for it. And they didn't kind of. They definitely made up for it by the end of the match. And there was a lot of great fire early on too, before those spots where Omega kind of patted Ishii on the head, and that kind of big fire.
That was the moment where I was very sure that Ishii would win this match. Because that's what Kenny Omega said very early on in this tournament. Is there someone who is able to control the monster that I have become? And he patted Ishii on the head twice, or three times even, I'm not sure. And that was the moment I was sure he was winning. But still, of course, Kenny is the champion, and there is always some doubt in these situations where you just think, okay, they will just have the champion go over anyways. But they didn't. And In a great fashion, actually. And you mentioned they have to fight for the best bout machine name. That should be on the line in their next match. But more importantly, I think in their next match, the heavyweight championship should be on the line. And I can see this being the main event for King of Pro Wrestling in October.
I mean, where else would you go with it after this one, you know? Go on.
You can just give your thoughts. But I just have one more point to add to this. There was this one near fall when Tomohiro Ishii hit this crucifix bomb, crucifix hold bomb, and I would have loved it if Ishii had gotten the win there, because that would be great for multiple reasons. A, it would give Ishii a new move to finish with, because he basically uses the vertical drop Bainbuster to finish his matches. And two, for the rematch, they would have a great near fall.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's a great idea. And that was a great spot, too. Like, the way he did that move was freaking incredible. And some great counters from Ishii. The man is a machine. The only thing I have to say, though, is that I thought for sure, because of how this tournament has played out, I don't want to say that I predicted this all along, but you did. I said, you have it on the spreadsheet with Flash. Like, nobody can argue when you look at the spreadsheet. But I did think when this match came across, I thought for sure Ishii would have to win, because then Omega, I couldn't imagine the world champion losing to Yano. So I thought Ishii was the more likely of the two. And I couldn't imagine Omega just going undefeated either. So I thought Ishii was very likely to win here. But still, he's such a great kind of fiery person, that whether he is going to win or he's a really big underdog, like perhaps their next match we talked about, when that match happens, I guarantee you, we're all going to know that there's no way Ishii can win, but by the end of it, I'm going to convince myself. Exactly. He's going to convince us all, and I'm going to say, because every time I watch his matches, the only thing I have to say when something like that happens, especially his one title challenge against Naito, you know, I remember watching that match, and I knew there was no way that would end well for him. But by the end of that match, I was thinking, you know, maybe he can win. Like, he deserves it. Give it to him, you know? Like, that's how I felt watching it. Like, I had that adrenaline rush for him. So, Ishii, man, what a tournament. What a performer. Again, he's taken the driver's seat when it comes to the top performers and MVPs of G1, in my opinion. These three matches he's had with Goto, Ibushi, and Omega have just been phenomenal, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember when we talked about Ishii versus Kota Ibushi and we said this match that the two had, there wasn't any way to follow this match. But here, we had Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito in the main event. And while I would say still that Tomohiro Ishii and Kenny Omega was better than this one, Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito went out to have a match that would be at least as good as Ishii and Kenny Omega. And I thought it was a very interesting match because this was a match designed for the quote-unquote new Tetsuya Naito that we have seen under the Los Ingobernables gimmick. Yes, for some portions of the match he speeded up, but for the majority of the match he tried to keep the match under control by keeping Kota Ibushi on the mat. And whenever the match was in a slow pace situation, Tetsuya Naito was controlling the match. And whenever the match got a little more speedy, Kota Ibushi was able to get in control of the match. But very interesting was that Naito was in control of, or dominated this, the majority of this match. And it even took Kota Ibushi to go for his most devastating move in his arsenal to get control over Tetsuya Naito, because in the end he hit him with 24 Sai, which is Kota Ibushi's Gunzo brainbuster, so
yeah,
to speak. It's more vertical drop than Ishii's vertical drop brainbuster I tweeted out yesterday. He hits this move every few years. I remember he hit it on Gota Ihashi and on Harashima once, but I don't remember when I've seen this move for the last time. I don't know. But here he, of course, hit Naito with it, because Naito apparently is just taking it all in this tournament and in his big matches in general. So, finish was absolutely outstanding as well. He went for the Kamigoe a couple of times. He was countered by Naito, who hit the running Destino once, and then it looked like Kota Ibushi would be catching him to lone dart him into the corner, which then led to the Kamigoe. So absolutely outstanding.
Oh yeah, for sure. I thought this was a really strong match overall. Not quite as great as the previous match, I would say, but still, what an effort and a great job. You have to give them credit for following it up, like you said. Also, don't you think that, because I feel like, to me, Naito, someone that's gotten a lot of buzz, and I think his first few matches, he had a really great start to the tournament. But if you look at those matches with Tonga, Yano, they obviously took him down a little bit, and that Goto match really under-delivered. I felt like it had been a little bit before he had a standout match, and it felt like in this match, he did his best. He took every bump, it felt like, and made it more dangerous than it had to be.
He even did that in the Yano match we talked about last time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think he is determined to have great matches in this tournament, and it felt like he especially was trying really hard to make this match work, because he just had great bumping and selling ability in this match, I thought, and really made it great. Ibushi, like you said, brought everything out. I really have to say, if there was a criticism, it's similar to their match last year, which was a phenomenal match, one of the top of the tournaments, the tops of the tournament, is that if you remember in that match, they hit that crazy jumping pile driver from the middle rope.
And they teased it here.
Yeah, yeah, they called back to that, and now you saw it with the 24 Sai. I think that should have been the finish, just because it looks so devastating that anybody kicking out, it's like, whenever, you know, again, whenever Grandpa Ken watches a match and something happens and he says, there's no way he can kick out, because usually he's very unanimated until the end. If it's like, it's over, that's it, then I know that they went too far a little bit. So just a little bit, though. I thought it was a great move, spectacular move, and a really great finishing sequence. Like you said, despite all of that, I thought they executed things very well and had a really great match overall. Definitely another step. Again, though, in B block, it's like this. Who even knows where we're ranked by the end of the tournament, because there's just been so many great matches. The tournament, the traffic in B block is very high right now, but this is right up there, in my opinion. Very, very strong outing and a great main event for the show.
Oh, yeah. And so that for block B gives us a standing for before the final show of block B matches in in the second to last show actually in Yokohama. We have Kenny Omega with 12, Kota Ibushi with 10, and Tetsuya Naito with 10, and those are the only three that up until that day were still eligible. And now Naito has lost to both Omega and Ibushi, which makes it almost impossible for Naito to still advance. So, like everybody expected, it will be coming down to Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi on the final night of Block B matches in Budokan, and that's going to be outstanding.
Yeah, is there even any way for? I don't think there's any way for Naito to make it.
I don't think so. Kenny Omega. Well,
I guess Omega if he lost to Yano.
Yeah, if Omega loses both matches and Naito wins both, Naito has 14 and Omega stays at 12, but Ibushi has to lose both matches as well, so very slim.
Yeah, that's true. Like I said, yeah, so it's going to be very hard. They're going to have to do some dancing to get Naito into the finals, but I think we both predicted Ibushi into the finals too, so our picks are still alive right now, and you even said Ibushi would win the whole tournament, so you've still got that hope alive, and Omega's not losing to Yano, in my opinion. he shouldn't, in my opinion, but we'll see where it goes. Like you said, Omega and Ibushi for the final night, I think it's something we can all look forward to, and a logical kind of, not a conclusion so much, but a huge step in their storyline that kind of started in February, and I can't wait to see that match overall.
Yeah, but that's Osaka for Block B for the Saturday. New Japan returned to the same arena on the Sunday morning for Block A matches, and we had a talking point earlier here in this show, and that's a point that we gotta pick up because we have to talk about Bad Luck Fale. For a long time on this show, we really have been fans of Bad Luck Fale, and we have defended him against criticism, oftentimes against unfair criticism. But now I gotta ask, why did he get in such amazing shape when it doesn't resonate in him having good matches? I don't really get it.
Striga, I think it's obvious that the women in Japan wanted him to lose some weight. They couldn't handle the big man.
I can, of course, see it from that perspective, and on another point, of course, from a health perspective as But still, that led me in a completely different direction, thinking that he got in great shape, so I figured he would have some killer matches in this tournament. But as I mentioned before, Tama Tonga is getting reactions, and he got an amazing reaction in this match too, when he went into the crowd and almost choked a fan and beat up Young Lions with a chair in the crowd, and the reaction was great, I thought. But it's taken attention from Bad Luck Fale, and he just seems like the odd man out here.
Yeah, it really hasn't worked. Again, I think the quality of A-Block has hurt him, and his surrounding cast hasn't helped his cause any. Tonga doing something so crazy was destined to get a reaction. And actually, despite my criticisms and my, quite frankly, not enjoying of Tama Tonga in this tournament, if you look at him, if he can't be these guys in B-Block, you know, he can't be Ishii, Ibushi, Goto. Like, he's not going to be those dudes. Like, so him doing this is really his chance to, if there was a way he was going to stand out, it's by doing crazy things like this and crazy foreigner things. So I do give him a little bit of props on that. And he did get a crazy reaction. He actually handled this run-in pretty well for a crazy spot like this, but I just thought this match totally sucked, though. Like, this match was Yoshihashi. Definitely again, and it seems like we say it every week, or every episode, Fale, again, with one of the worst matches of the A-Block. I don't know if I would say it's the worst, but it's up there, I would say.
I don't think it's worse than Fale and Makabe.
Yeah, I'd say the white match was the worst. Mm. This might be the Omega Ishii of bad matches. Like it's only the third, you know.
But they are not going for us for good matches. They just they just have the story, and that's about
what
it.
What are they going up for? Well, like I said, they've changed it a bunch of times,
yeah,
I feel like.
A bunch of times. Maybe we'll have something at the final show, I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't enjoyed this tournament for Poly, though, unfortunately.
No, usually the final show is a show where they advance some storylines. Maybe they will have something there, too.
I could see them winning the six-man titles, yeah. Or maybe even the tag titles, if Tonga and Tenga. Tenga's gotten a huge push. We mentioned this on the last show. He's won a bunch of matches on the undercard, so maybe they're setting something up for that. But like I said, I just can't see any of these guys making big challenges for singles titles right now. And if you remember, what Fale did get a bit of a run when he first kind of debuted under this new character, he did pretty good in his title matches against guys like Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. He had a great match with Okada. So
it's so funny how Tagaloa always points out that he is a former IC champion, and that seems so far away. You know, it actually is far away. It's like 5 years ago. So at this point,
Man, it's crazy. That's crazy. That was 5 years ago. It only lasted like a month or two, I think, too, before he lost the title back.
He did
still
a successful defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, not a good match.
No.
And I feel very bad for Yoshiashi that these are the 2 points he picks up, and he gets points by DQ and not by a decisive finish. So not a good tournament for him.
No, not at all. I've enjoyed his matches. I haven't calculated anything yet, but I think this match is going to take him way down, unfortunately, the rankings. He was barely at the top of A block for me, because I think he has worked the hardest, and his matches he's just had the strongest matches. But this match, I think, is going to take him down. He's had some inconsistent performances, but I don't think you can pin this match on him.
Yeah, and in the next match, it was I was imagining, you know, we've heard from some guys from New Japan that they said oftentimes they don't know what matches they are winning within the G1 climax. And so I imagined Minoru Suzuki and Hangman Page looking at the sheet for the show and seeing Hangman Page defeats Minoru Suzuki. So they figure out a way how to get that story over, and they said, okay, Suzuki, you're going to torture me for the entire match, and then I'll get one move, and then I pick up the win.
Great. Like I said, that's always one of our favorite stories. It seems like a lot of Suzuki matches go that way, though.
Yeah.
Look at the Tanahashi match.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. That's just kind of his MO these days, apparently. He's another one that's really kind of let me down in this tournament, because I was so hyped for him. I thought he was a huge potential standout for the tournament and someone that A-Block was counting on. And I don't think he's really delivered at the level, especially early this year against Goto. Even the Makabe match I thought was better than any of these matches that he's had. And this, again, this was a solid match, hard-hitting and all of that, but nothing that I think anybody would really need to go out of their way to watch or ever rewatch again. I thought this was a very solid match.
If you
want to
watch anything from this match, watch the final minute, because I really like the finish where he picked up Minoru Suzuki and went straight for the rite of passage and pinned him for the very surprising 3 count. I thought the finish was great.
And just like we said against Makabe, Suzuki's going nowhere in this tournament. Yep. He's 50 years old now. Why not? Like, why not have Page win? If you see something in him, if you don't see anything in him, there's no reason to. But if you see something in him, and you obviously had to have seen something to put him in this tournament, why not do it? You know. So I have no problem with that at all. And that's a good win for him. That's something that really actually is legitimate for him. So really good stuff for Page. Still, the matches are only pretty solid. Nothing spectacular.
Someone who New Japan clearly sees something in is Jay White, because he went up to 12 points, defeating Togi Makabe. 10 minutes. I thought this match was pretty good. Nothing, again, nothing you have to go out of your way to see. But I thought the wrestling was very solid here. Nice reversals, nice suplexes and all. In the end, it was the Blade Runner that got the job done for Jay White, and Makabe is slowly phasing out of the tournament. Again, he looked solid here, but not as good as he did at the beginning of the G1.
Yeah, I actually was very surprised at how good this match was getting for a while. I thought they had some really good chemistry with each other. Really unexpected, too, I thought. Yeah. You know, this isn't a matchup on paper. You think, this is going to be something great. Problem? The finishing run was kind of the same as we've seen in these Jay White matches overall, and I think that knocked it down a notch, you know? And out of all the guys, you'd think that, can't they give him a clean win over Makabe, of all people? They gave Paige a win over Makabe. Why can't White get the same treatment? Why does it have to be the same thing over and over? And that's really my problem with all of their stories that they're telling right now, is it's just too repetitive. And I think this, again, there's just diminishing returns on all of these matches, I think. And I didn't like the finish at all. I think that really soured my enjoyment on what was actually a surprisingly good match overall.
Yeah. I liked it. This was a very decent mid-card G1 match. Again, you don't have to watch that. If you're picking cherries here, that's not a cherry you should pick. But we have two cherries left here on this cake, on this G1 cake here, because Hiroshi Tanahashi went up to 14, defeating Michael Elgin, who stays at 6. 16 minutes, 3 seconds. Tanahashi won with which was supposed to be a small package, but unfortunately they botched the finish, which ended a match that I thought was Tanahashi's best G1 match up until this point.
I think both men's best G1 matches. I think this is one of the best A-block matches. I think you could easily make the case this is near the top until the finish. Like I said, the finish was not exactly perfectly executed. And again, we saw it in the Yoshihashi match with Tanahashi. That was a really good match, it felt like, but it got cut off short. And this really took it to the next level. An extra 5 minutes, an extra bit of power moves from Elgin. And then, like you said, the cradle kind of got messed up. But that said, it still was a really good match, I thought. It was very strong, one of the best in A-Block. I think both of these next two matches are two of the best in A-Block so far, and very intriguing booking with Tanahashi so far.
Very intriguing booking, and also very intriguing storytelling here. Very very simple storytelling, actually, with Michael Elgin being portrayed as a monster, even though he isn't bigger than Tanahashi, but he was portrayed as the power guy in this match, against whom Tanahashi had to break free and to get his babyface pops in, and that worked out perfectly. And so, a match that will probably end up in the top 5 of Block A, I'm pretty sure.
And yeah, I'd rank it
up. Yeah, and next up we had a match, Katsuhiko Okada against Evil. And to me, this match suffered from the fact that at no point in this match, unlike when Tomohiro Ishii has title matches, at no point in this match did I believe that Evil would actually pull the upset again on Okada, because Okada had to win to keep up with Tanahashi. So the match itself was very good, and they brought up something that they did in their previous tag preview on the Saturday show, where Evil hit Okada with the Rainmaker, which looked pretty cool, and he did it here again. And they went for a nice reversal in the end, where Evil hit the Rainmaker again, and then Okada even bursted out his own STO, the Space Tornado Okada, against Evil, which then led to the Rainmaker finish. I thought it was a great match, but it lacked excitement for me because I was sure Okada would win.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with you. And that's why I gave the slight edge to the previous match, to Tana versus Elgin, as the best of A-Block so far. But this is right up there, though, I think. Another strong match. Like you said, the slight lack of drama really hurt it a little bit, but I liked what they did in the match. I liked the counters. I liked how they worked the match. I think that Evil here, this was definitely his best match of the tournament. He's someone that I think we both thought, and a lot of people thought, was lacking so far in this tournament. He really delivered, and I think Okada has been one of the... he's been a positive point for the A-Block so far, as it turned out. After a really shaky start with this storyline, I think the wrestling, as he's continued wrestling different guys like Yoshihashi, Evil, etc., I think he's really improved. You know, he started off with White and Fale, rough start, and now he's facing other guys. I think he's really elevating his game, and hopefully he's in for a really big finish on that last night versus Tanahashi, because I think if they bring it home, you could look at this as a pretty solid tournament, even though I'm still not a huge fan of how this storyline worked out, because like you said, it took away the drama from all of his matches, and I think we saw it again. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah, and even though Evil now has 8 points, he lost his past 3 matches, And the bad thing about this is that he only picked up points against people on his level or people below his level.
Yeah, and yeah, no big wins.
No big wins. He lost to Okada, lost to Tanahashi, lost to Minoru Suzuki. But that, I think, will lead to Evil defeating Jay White on the final night, so that it comes down to Tanahashi and Okada.
I think that's exactly what is going to happen. I think I predicted that at the very start of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I exactly predicted that it would come down to that. My final could be on the horizon if Okada can get the win. And it'll be interesting to see, because I think both men have a case for it. Because right now, the tournament, in terms of who could get this briefcase, is really kind of wide open. But ultimately, and I think we can talk about it now. We'll just talk about the booking, because we're heading into this home stretch of the tournament, ultimately. I think that of these guys that could win, Okada is the one they trust the most to main event Wrestle Kingdom. And he's who I predicted at the start. And I can't get over how he's been in the main event of every one of these shows for A-Block. You know, like I said, I that jumped out to me right away when these tournament matches got announced. And as soon as that happened, I penciled him in, and I think he's the most logical option, though a Tanahashi match wouldn't completely surprise me if he won.
And again, I've made this point before on our G1 coverage here. I believe this is the last chance for New Japan and for Hiroshi Tanahashi to have Tanahashi in a main event position, in a leading main event position for the Tokyo Dome before he slowly goes down the cards. So that's why I still ruling not out that Tanahashi could pull out the win here in this tournament. And I'm still thinking that maybe they will go with a storyline that Okada underestimates Tanahashi because he beat him so easily in May. That's what I talked about when the tournament started. That's still something that I can see happening. But again, of course, yes, Okada is the one they trust the most. And Kenny Omega versus Okada is their big match. And if they can do it once more, they may even do it in the Tokyo Dome. Why not?
I guess it would be a logical end to their feud at the Dome. Because like I said, I always said, as soon as that match happened, Okada, he had that claim because he pinned Omega first. That was an important moment. I always pegged that as an important moment, that he pinned Omega first in their match. So that gives Okada a chance to say, hey, if we had a normal match, I'd still be champion right now. And, you know, with Omega and Okada, you know, that's interesting. That's an interesting storyline. Right now, it's just like we said earlier, it's just going to be hard for Naito unless Omega loses to Yano. That's really the only way.
Yeah.
So, like I said, unless we see something really crazy happen with Naito that nobody expected, I really think Okada's the man to beat. But like I said, Tanahashi would be my number two, because your point is completely relevant and true. If they want to get one last big match over Tanahashi, out of Tanahashi, rather, this is the time to do it. And against Omega is not a match that has been overexposed if they wanted to go there. This is something that would feel kind of fresh and something that they would, I think, would be a great thing for Tanahashi if he had one last big match. And I think that's a great story and a very simple story, nothing too out there or esoteric or crazy that Omega kind of does sometimes. I think Tanahashi, one last title shot, that's a tried and true storyline in any sport.
It's a great trope.
Yeah, exactly. So going there, I think that's a totally realistic scenario, but I'm still going to stick with Okada just because I picked him first, and I think that makes more sense overall because they have the built-in storyline. Tana and Omega don't necessarily have that built-in storyline unless Ishii wins the title in October and they want to go with Tanahashi.
They don't have this inbuilt storyline, but that would be a fresh match for a main event.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, that's exactly what I said earlier. Yeah. It'd be a fresh match. This hasn't been overexposed, unlike Okada and Omega. So, and plus, like, Tana has his own storyline, so they don't really need that necessarily. And Omega, his storyline is he just wants to have a great match. So he'll be fine. I still say Ishii could beat Omega. Unfortunately, you didn't get my pop for that I was hoping for. But Ishii going into the Dome is what I want to see.
Yeah.
But that one.
As the champion. So one thing I wanted to mention here again, because I forgot it in the Ishii and Kenny Omega match, For Michael Elgin and Tanahashi, we pointed out that both guys did a great job in the match, and I don't want to sell Kenny Omega short here for the Ishii match because he also was a very crucial part of this match being so ridiculously great, and he really gave it his all. He was bleeding from the mouth after the match. Very similar fashion as Kota Ibushi, actually. What a coincidence that was. So Kenny Omega, also a great match with Tomohiro Ishii. And I don't know. These three shows, or these four shows that we have left, I will enjoy every single second of them, because this G1 Climax, I don't know if it was as outstanding as the previous ones, but all the time when this tournament is running, I have the best time watching wrestling for the entire year. So G1 Climax time is always very special. And Yokohama is coming up, and then three shows in Budokan. That's going to be magic.
Yeah, it should be a great show. A really great end to the tournament, a great conclusion. You look at the matches they have. Really, really, and we've made this point on the last show, ultimately, these guys, a lot of them were eliminated early on, but they kind of just cut to the guys that we all thought would be there anyway.
Yeah.
So, no big surprises. They just cut it how it is with Omega and Ibushi and Tanahashi and Okada and Jay White there to potentially throw a wrench into things if they wanted to go that route. But I'm with you, Strig. I really enjoy talking about these tournaments, talking with people on Twitter, talking with you. And that really is my favorite part of everything, because this tournament, I definitely think, has been a step back just because their goals were different in this one than perhaps some other tournaments. So I think that kind of took a damper on it. I don't actually think it's actually worked out on any level, to be honest with you, when it comes to Jay White, the firing squad. But it was at least an attempt at something different and not retreading things. So I can see why they did this. I just don't think it's been executed very well or really worked out. And even stuff like the champions in B Block, I thought were a real drop ball with Juice and Goto, especially Juice, because I thought he had so much momentum. But we get the Ishii title match, hopefully. He still owed a title shot from 2 years ago when he beat Okada. His well-deserved title shot, and now he has a chance at it. So I cannot call this tournament bad. And actually, those especially to me, Ishii and Ibushi to Ishii and Goto, those matches in any other tournament would have been the top match. So I can't say this was any kind of bad tournament or anything like that. I think it was a good tournament, and I really, really loved the top three match. I thought those were all outstanding, and matches that will be up there with any other G1 matches, I think, like truly classic matches. And so with that said, I look forward to seeing how it all plays out. I don't know where they're going with this, because they did end up where we all thought they would, but they also threw some wrenches into things, like when Omega beat Naito. I think that surprised a lot of people, except for you. You did call that. So I have to give you credit on that one. I was so surprised by that. I really thought they would. Just like Juice losing to Zach, that was a surprise too.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, really, they ended up where we thought they would. Some guys have gotten over, and we'll have a better view of it and a better retrospective by the time this tournament ends. And we finally have a clear vision of what everybody did and how everybody's tournament played out, not just in terms of their in-ring performance. How many stars did you give Tonga's match, since he said he was going to want for 7 stars?
Oh, I don't usually give star ratings, so no star.
Oh, no star. Tonga's not going to be happy about that.
Yeah, I know.
Like I said, unfortunately, he's chasing those stars. But despite all that, we can look at them from that angle. We can look at them from the booking, where how many guys won. We just had a really in-depth breakdown of Evil that I really liked there. So you could do that on really any of these wrestlers and really try to read into it a little bit and see who beat who and who got big wins out of it. Because even better than the record, I think the standout, you know, wins that you put a stamp on somebody are even more important. And that's what you got to look for sometimes. And we'll see how it plays out at the end of the tournament. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too, and, you know, unless something really crazy happens in Yokohama, we will be back when the tournament concludes, because it doesn't really make sense to do a show on the Friday when there is another show on Saturday and we play through scenarios that don't come to fruition then. So I think it's the most logical way to go, that we will be back after the finals. But until then, of course, if you want to get into interaction with us, you can fire up the Twitter machine and go to @Striga, STRIGGA on Twitter, and you can also fire up the machine to talk to Dylan on there.
Check me out at @DylanZeroSky, talking about Japanese wrestling, Mexican wrestling, Philippines wrestling, Australian wrestling, British wrestling, American wrestling, whatever you want to talk about. We could go for it all. I love it all. I love everything about it. And I love talking to the listeners and all the people that I'm friends with. And if you want to check out my other show on MLW, check out Lucha Talk. We just had some new episodes dropped the last couple of weeks. We'll have another one in a couple of days, probably, after this one loads out. Some really crazy stuff going on with Triple Mania, the Anniversario coming up. And we'll cover it all for you. So check out that show. Check out this show. Give us 5-star reviews. We want the stars. Striga might not use the star ratings, but give us the 5 stars
give
on iTunes.
Give us the stars, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Those are the stars. Those are the stars we care about even more.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and give us those and say some nice words, because I personally really appreciate a lot of the compliments that we get for these shows. So I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, we care about our average star rating, of course.
Yes.
And I was so surprised that you mentioned that there was crazy stuff going on in Mexico. I'm so surprised.
It really is. It's a crazy thing, isn't it? You never expect, yeah, out of all the territories that Mexican wrestling, Lucha Libre, would have something that nobody saw coming and it doesn't necessarily even make sense going on. So, and in every company too, not just AAA like usual. So lots of crazy stuff there, lots of fun stuff to talk about, but nothing as big as the G1 right now. Lucha will have its time. So check that out when you have the time. We really appreciate all that, too. But this show, the G1, I got to be honest, Strick, I'm really getting nostalgic now already. We're on that stretch.
Yeah.
We're on that home stretch. It's going to be a sad day when this tournament ends.
Oh, yeah, it will be. But we'll get the chance to load our batteries once again, to come back even stronger after the G1 is over, and to talk about different subjects again. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Love talking, even on these shows, bringing up these oft-undercovered promotions like Wrestle 1, 01.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing that. And All Japan as well. We love talking about the All Japan. And we'll probably get into some Noah soon at the end of the month too. So really looking forward to that. And it should be all great.
Yep. So then, this has been the Eastern Lariat. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.